It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show.
Hey, money nerds. I don't know if I mentioned this enough, but I think one of the greatest ways to make money or start a business is a service-based business. Now, this is something that I personally do myself. So I have a service-based business where I do financial coaching as a service for pretty much everybody listening in and beyond. I think it's a really, really fun business model. And it's honestly, the idea of having a service-based business is really enticing for a lot of people because it's a good way for you to immediately start making money with your existing skills or knowledge. And that's why I was so excited to bring on today's guest, Tim Calise. If you don't know Tim, he is a versatile entrepreneur, investor, consultant, and podcast host who helps service business owners uncover the profits hidden inside their existing business. By the age of 25, Tim had raised over $325 million for his investment company before moving on to building a seven-figure tech-enabled fitness business alongside his wife. Most recently, Tim was one of the four executive team members at Gym Launch, aside Alex and Layla Hormozy, where he oversaw the development and launch of Allen, a machine learning SaaS company, which grew from zero to $20 million in annual recurring revenue in 6 months. That's insane. Tim currently helps make founders' dreams come true by implementing his product-to-profit framework as a sought-after number two to ambitious founders. In this conversation, we cover a lot of ground. We talk about how he started the late-night snack business as a college student and his initial textbook company as well. We talk about tips for standing out as a service provider. So if you're a real estate agent or a mortgage broker or a financial coach like me, then there are some tips that can help you stand out. We also talk about niching down or niching down, however you want to say it. And if there's such a thing as becoming too niche. I think this is a great conversation. If you've ever been curious about business or you want to understand if there is such a thing as niching down too much, you're going to love this conversation. We also talk about this exercise of the perfect day and how that can help you become a better marketer. And hypothetically, this is my favorite part of the entire episode. I asked him if he were to start a lawn care business tomorrow and he really needed it to work, what would he do? Walk us through the step by step. I always find that sometimes when we have these conversations, we kind of can gloss over this stuff. So Tim was so kind to share exactly what he would do from a step by step perspective with a business model that he would essentially try to launch and get off the ground. I thought it was really interesting, and I think it's going to be helpful from an educational standpoint too. All right, guys, let's go ahead and turn the mic over to this conversation with Tim Calise. Hey, Tim, thank you so much for hanging out today. It is such a pleasure getting to know you and learning more from you. I'm really pumped for today.
Likewise, Whitney. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit. I've got to know. I was reading through your background and I'm very curious about your textbook company and your late night snack delivery business. So can you take us back to like, what was Tim doing at that time in your life and where did you come up with these ideas?
Yeah. So going back even to when I was in like middle school, I was the kid that always saw problems and really sought to solve them. So when I was in college, I was fortunate enough to go to college in Washington, D.C. So for anyone who's been kind of in the D.C. area, the dynamics there are, you know, professionals come in from Northern Virginia and Maryland and come to work, have dinner, and then everyone leaves. So after like 9 o'clock at night, even on the weekends, the city effectively dies down. And as a college student, you know, 18, 19, yes, we were less than 20, you know, under 21, that was when things kind of just started to get interesting. And so my sophomore year in college, being the avatar we said, you know, what's going on late night if we want, you know, drinks and snacks and things like that. And 7-Eleven, there was one 7-Eleven kind of nearby us. And that was the only option that was around. And so when we were coming, you know, we'd go back, you know, go out late at night and want to come back, and nothing was open. And so a couple of friends of mine, roommates and I, started a late night snack delivery business. And the idea was, because it was really easy to get around, we would deliver on bikes. So imagine, if you will, you were out at night, you leave a bar or a party or whatever. We created a website and a phone-in system where you could order remotely. Mm-hmm. And then because our delivery times on bikes were so fast, our average delivery time was 7 minutes from time of order to the time we'd be standing outside your door. So you could literally get in a, back when they're pre-Uber, you know, get in a cab, and we'd be outside your door by the time you got home. And so it taught us the idea of, like, we were our avatar. We filled a problem that needed solving. And we did what I would call speed to money, which was, we came up with the idea. We launched a website. We went to BJ's, tested the idea, and it took off. So it was a low risk, high, you know, kind of high return opportunity for us, and taught some other lessons, which we can dive into as far as marketing and things like that. But that was my first kind of real business, if you will. Similarly, as most college students know, you pay tons of money for college textbooks at the beginning of the semester. And at the end, they give you pennies on the dollar. And we kind of wanted to level that field, playing field. And so we created a textbook exchange program, effectively what was like an eBay for college textbooks. And bigger capital investment, it took us about $50,000 to build that business because we had websites and technology and all that stuff. And then I negotiated a deal with the largest used textbook holder, inventory holder in the country. And so every day in the morning, I would upload a list of 50,000 textbooks to kind of get this business started. And we created the largest used textbook marketplace really in the country at that time. So it was very entrepreneurial, even from an early age, and kind of solved problems that we had ourselves.
That's incredible. Take us back a little ways too. Like, how was money talked about when you were a kid? Give us some context there.
Yeah, great question. So I grew up in a family. My father was actually in the professional services. He was in the banking industry. And so money for me was one of those things that was kind of like, it was what I now know as the abundant mindset. Like, it's out there. There's lots of it. You know, you got to have to kind of figure out how you want to participate kind of in that way. Now, in the beginning, my beliefs around money were, you know, you had to go to college, you had to have an MBA, you had to kind of go and work at a big bank, and kind of he who sacrifices the most will ultimately end up with the most. And as I went through my career, I kind of realized that was not my game. I didn't like the kind of gladiator undertone to that. So being kind of more entrepreneurial, it was like, it was actually more about solve big problems or solve problems. The bigger ones you solve, the more you can be rewarded for it. And so I had a different spin, I think, on money, but it was always a very abundant mindset. And it was something that I knew was kind of out there for me. I just had to figure out kind of how to enter the marketplace, if you will, in a way that was authentic for me.
That makes sense too. So let's dive into those two businesses that you started. I would imagine at a very young age, you probably learned more than you bargained for about business and logistics and operations and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of curious, like, from those two businesses, I know you have since expanded and you do much more than those. Like, that was just your entry point. But what are some of the lessons you learned from that that you still carry forward today?
Yeah. So I think the mindset, whether it be kind of financial or otherwise, that I had was, I can pretty much figure out anything.
Yeah.
And I think when I started those businesses, they were naive. I was naive in the idea of, like, well, the starting is the hard part. The reality is the executing was the hard part. But I had this, some people call it grit, some people call it, you know, adaptability or whatever it might be. I just kind of knew that I could figure out whatever I needed to know along the way. And so I jumped off the cliff and built my wings along the way down. And I think that was super important at that part of my life, because I had no fear. It was, you know, the risk we had was time, effectively. And, you know, it wasn't going to change my life one way or the other, you know, if it worked or not. But I definitely wanted to kind of put my toe in that water of entrepreneurialism at that time. The biggest lesson that I learned, though, was on marketing and brand and how to stand out in a marketplace.
Yeah.
I will be fully transparent. I didn't give one thought to this in the beginning. I was like, if we just create something cool, then they will come. You know, if you build it, they will come. I was in that kind of headspace. And it doesn't, the world doesn't work like that, unfortunately. But I serendipitously would take the snack delivery business. One of my partners and I happened to be taking human sexuality in college at the class at that time, the exact same time. And the professor, who was a senior person in the Department of Public Health in Northern Virginia, was telling us, you know, about the initiatives that they were undertaking for that year. And one of the things was to promote safe sex practices in and around the DC metro area. Now, being entrepreneurial and enterprising folks, we walked up to the professor at the end of the one of our classes and said, so we started this late night snack delivery business, and we put two and two together and said, we have your core audience exactly when you want their attention.
Yep.
What can we do to work together? And after a couple of conversations, they donated 10,000 free condoms to our company.
Nice.
So we said, all right, we're going to distribute these one with every order. It made total sense to us.
Yeah.
And we thought it was like a do good thing in the beginning. It turned into a marketing angle, which was, hey, campussnacks.com, it's the place where you get a free condom with every order. And it took off like a rocket ship. We had been doing sampling, we had been doing flyering and all these kind of like really heavy, time intensive things. And it just took a novel idea. Something different, pattern interrupt to get us on the map. And then everybody was talking about us and our usage went through the roof.
That is so fascinating. I love that you, it's almost like that purple cow theory, right? Where it's like you just do something very, almost outlandish, kind of outrageous, just a little bit of that pattern interruption. How do you, work with a lot of people, and we're definitely going to talk about like how to start a service business for sure. But I'm curious, with a lot of the people you work with, what do you do when it seems like it's just a very boring, generic business? Like, I mean, let's talk like maybe you're a mortgage lender or you're a real estate agent and you're like, okay, well, like, how do I actually, like, I mean, I can't include a condo. I guess maybe you could, but, you know, like, how do we start to maybe identify different ways that are business appropriate to really stand out?
Yeah. So the way I think about this is kind of is deciding what part of kind of the virtual real estate do you want to own in your marketplace? And typically it's, can you do it kind of faster, cheaper, higher quality than anyone else, some version thereof? Or what is it that is just different? So take real estate agents as an example. I actually do a lot in the real estate and home services industries. I know someone right now who does runs call centers for real estate agents. So they do like live transfers for agents. There are lots of companies that do that. He specializes in, and his team is in South America right now primarily. So they focus only on Spanish speaking agents.
Smart.
Super smart. So it's not, we help all agents. And people think about this as like niching down and things like that. Right. Niching, in my opinion, is really just, how do you take and distill down what it is you do and who you can offer it to the smallest possible component that you can think of? And it's just, instead of being broad, you want to be very, very specific. So he actually focuses not only on Spanish-speaking agents, he also specializes in certain geographies, which now reduces the what we call boiling the ocean analogy, which is I need everyone from everywhere. It's like, I just need to do this one thing, this person in this marketplace. And the way to know if you've got this or not is what we call a dog whistle. For anyone who owns a dog, the idea is a dog whistle is at such a high tone that only the only the dogs can hear it. What is the language that you use that is only attractive to the core person you want to attract?
That makes sense.
So if I say something like, Zillow is lying to you. If you're just walking down the street, people are like, what do you mean Zillow's lying to me? Like, I don't care. It's, you know, I'm not buying or selling a house. An agent knows exactly what that means. It means they're passing off referrals as referrals when they're really web leads.
That's right.
And they're like, I hate it. It spikes the thought process for the person that wants to hear the message. So as long as you can kind of figure out your language patterns around what you do, it will appeal to only a certain part of the marketplace.
Do you feel like, I guess two questions. One, is there such a thing as being too niche? Like, can you go too far where you're like, oh, I'm actually not talking to anybody. Like I got five people in my list, or is that not really a thing? And then my second question too, when it comes to the language, how do we identify what is going to resonate well with them? Is that something that's like best to speak to yourself, like you did when you were in college with your snack business? Or is it something where there's other ways to do that?
Yeah, great question. So to answer the first is, it is a fallacy, in my opinion, that most people carry that you can niche down too far.
Totally.
Yeah. If you think you're the one of only, like, just the more life you live, the more you realize we're unique in a lot of ways, but we're also very similar in a lot of ways.
More than I'd like to admit, huh?
Probably. Yeah, we like to think so, right? Right. So yes, I do believe that if you try to get to a part where that where you are uncomfortably small, or uncomfortably targeted in who you're looking for, you're probably on the right track, because you will find there are more people like that than you might initially believe. Kind of the second is, and I take some of this from Frank Kern, famous kind of coach, consultant, marketing guy. So this is not all unique to me, but he talked about the idea of a perfect day. And what I mean by that is, he was speaking to like, well, how do you know like who you are inside, what motivates you and things like that? And part of that exercise, that's a great video on YouTube if you haven't seen it, he talks about understanding your true motivations. Hmm. So things like, I might say that I want more money. Like, I want to increase my income. But really what I want is freedom. And so if you think about how do you talk to your market, we tend to, in the beginning, talk tactics. I'm going to give you 10 courses. I'm going to give you, a call, something like that. People don't want courses and they don't want a call. What they want is they want their kind of fears and frustrations addressed, and switch those into what is the ideal scene? What do I look for, in the positive way? Where do I want to move from, my ideal scene going forward? The language patterns you use should be speaking to the future person, not the person they are today. Hmm. And so if you can be that person, like I can speak to the independent entrepreneur, I can speak to the college student, whatever it might be. If you're not your core audience, you still should go through that exercise, because you need to stand in those shoes and be able to almost articulate their problems, their fears, frustrations, dreams, and aspirations even better than they can themselves. And that is how you can win that, win attention to that market.
How do you find is the best way for, let's speak to maybe like a newer entrepreneur, or maybe somebody who's been doing it for a little bit, they have a small customer base. How do they start to formulate that, so they're getting that type of feedback, so that they can actually say like, hey, I hear you, like, let me go, take what you said and turn this into maybe an offering or marketing language. Like, how do we even start to get that feedback?
Yeah. So this is coming from a self-appointed overthinker.
You too.
When I was growing up, and this is just kind of part of most of our kind of upbringing, which is when you're in school, you get graded.
Yeah.
And part of that means the smartest person is kind of sits atop everything else. Mm-hmm. That's how much do I know? How smart am I? It's all about me. Mm. Here's the secret. It doesn't matter. What matters is where your market is. So again, coming from someone who, this is not sitting behind a computer crafting the perfect offer and the perfect product, I'm going to give you the cheat sheet to how to actually succeed in starting a business. Mm-hmm. Have an idea and think about who would best utilize the thing you build, the product or the service. We are now connected more so than ever, and go and find a bunch of those people. So I'd say, hey, Whitney, my name's Tim. I noticed that you run a podcast. I'm actually thinking about starting a podcast group for people who don't want podcast as a brand, but more as a direct response vehicle. I'm going to kind of build the program around some experience that I have. I'm going to price it at like $49 a week or something like that. If I built something like that, does that appeal to, like, would that be helpful to you? And you might be like, oh my God, that'd be amazing. I didn't even think of it that way. If you did that, I would sign up immediately. Like, okay, cool. We sell before we build. And it is completely counter to the way that most people do things. They build and then they try to sell. So the short answer is find a potential offering, find a potential audience, and make as many offers as you possibly can in the shortest amount of time. And they will tell you exactly what product they want.
Oh, for sure they will. And sometimes they don't tell you in words, but they tell you in not purchasing. So you're like, oh, okay, here we go.
100%. Yeah. You know? Because at the end of that conversation, you go, awesome. Thank you so much for your feedback. I'm going to go out and build this. I'll have it ready in about 30 days. But as a charter member, it's $49, Visa, MasterCard, or American Express. Like, right. I'm going to take your money now and we're going to start it in 30 days. Like, and here's the key. Most of the time you do 10 of those sales, you just made $500 plus some continuity.
Yeah.
You have your first customers and it paid for all the software you're going to need. And, you know, maybe a VA to help you and stuff like that. That's how you can start a business for $0 up front.
Oh, I think this is so huge. I hope people really do understand that because that is truly everything. It's that market validation before you go build it. It's truly where you find success and you start to get that proof of concept so quickly. And so I'm really grateful that you're sharing this. If you are a garden lover, you've got to listen up. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want from fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I ordered a couple plants. I know I've talked about them a few times on this podcast. I have some peaches and cream, honeysuckle vines, and an English ivy vine for the flower pot, and they are coming along so well. If you haven't been following along on Instagram, you're going to see them being planted, and I think it'll take a couple of years before they really get to the level that I want where they drape over the flower pot, but they are so cool. Now, here's the cool thing too. This spring, they have the best deals online with up to half off select plants and other deals, and listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using code MONEYNERDS at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code MONEYNERDS at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MONEYNERDS. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Okay, hear me out. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet. So for me, this was my debit card. But what I realized is that I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. And now I've got a card with more miles and more upgrades, and I truly love it. Right now, I'm not doing too much traveling, but I am collecting all of those points so that I can hopefully take a really sweet vacation in the very near future. But I gotta know, what could future you do with more travel rewards? Would you do a hotel upgrade? Would you do lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. With all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms do apply. Let's get kind of into the weeds on this. Like, let's say, Tim, you personally are going to start a lawn mowing business. Okay. This is your thing. Like, you're like, this summer, my 9 to 5 is fantastic, but I really want to start to increase my income streams. And I think I can do some lawn mowing. If you were starting this business brand new this summer, like, walk us through, like, what would you do? How would you actually get this business off the ground?
So first of all, I would change my mindset to be, I want to start a lawn mowing business, to being, I'm going to be the guy who is the curb appeal guy.
Oh, I like it.
Because I'm not in the lawn mowing business. I'm in the, hey, Whitney, I'm going to make your neighbors jealous. I want them to walk by and drive by your house and go, oh my gosh, how is her lawn always perfect? You can eat off of it. Mm-hmm. Like, her house looks amazing. That's the guy I want to be. So that's my positioning. Mm. Then I would go to every lawn care business inside of probably 5 miles of where I operate. And I would go and look at the reviews on Google and Facebook.
Okay.
And I would sort it by 1 star. And I want to look at every single person that's like, what did they do wrong? They were unresponsive. They didn't cut. They didn't show up. They were whatever the things are. And I would make a note of all of the complaints. Now I'm going to be the guy who's going to make your lawn look amazing. And I'm going to be responsive. I'm going to be efficient. I'm going to be, you know, whatever the thing is, whatever the marketplace is needing. And I would even reach out to those people or other people in the area and say, kind of, here's what I'm doing. I personally believe, again, it's not about the tactics. It's about the result. I would probably door knock in the beginning just to test my idea and say, hey, I noticed that, you know, not only are, does the lawn look, you know, want to look great. Who does your trees? Who does your shrubs? Who does, you know, the, have you had your home power washed recently? Like, I want by the end of this summer for you to feel like you have the best house on the block and you have that pride of ownership. That's the job I want to deliver to you.
Gotcha.
That's so what
going,
I would do.
You're if, going beyond like just lawn care, right?
100%. And here's what I would do. You'd go, well, you were starting a lawn care business. I'm like, right. I'd also go to the power washing guy and say, hey, Paul, if I send you any customers, will you give me like a 10% referral fee on any business I send you?
Yep.
Because the hardest part is acquiring the customer. And this is exactly the point of view that I have on the world, which is if I walk up to your door and I say, hey, I want to take care of your lawn. Do you have somebody that does this, this, and this? Are you happy with them? If they say no, be like, awesome. Me and my team, we're going to take care of everything. Because most homeowners, I just use lawn care as an example, don't actually want to be in the management business. They just want the end result. I'm like, cool. You'll get one bill from me. I'll manage everything else. You don't worry about it. If you need anything, you call me.
I love that. How would you start to begin to price something like that?
I would start with, my personal opinion is I would start slightly above market rate.
Okay.
And people would go, well, somebody else can do it cheaper. You're like, right. But I'm here because they're not getting the job done. And we're talking because there's something they're not doing. Yeah. I have analyzed every one of my competitors within 100 miles of here. And I know exactly why you might not hire them, because I'm not in your lawn care business. I'm in the, I want you to feel like you have the best house on the street business.
Yep.
And they don't care about you. I go to bed thinking, how can I make your lawn and your house look better? And I'm going to take care of it all for you. That's what I would do. I'd price it personally. I'd sell one, two, three of them. Mm-hmm. And then I'd raise the price by 10% and I'd keep going until I got more than 50% no's.
Oh, that's pretty helpful.
That's the simplest version. The kind of 2.0 version of that is I'd have three pricing tiers. Low, medium, high. I'd try to get everybody to basically buy the middle tier, but I'd have some kind of premium VIP option that is significantly more expensive. It's usually 10 times the price of the other one. And you will sell about, the numbers say about 5% of people will buy the high ticket, just because out of, it's just sheer math.
Do you feel like, okay, so I'm following why you would go more of like an encompassing and do like a slightly different value proposition than just like a commodity of like, I'm going to mow your lawn. Do you want it? Yes or no. But for somebody where that might be a kind of a newer concept where they're like, well, what the heck, Tim, why wouldn't you just go mow their lawn when you get off work? Like you'll make 50, 60 bucks. Like, why not? Talk to us a little bit about like why you positioned it that way.
There's an old saying that says you don't buy a drill because you need a drill. You buy a drill because you need a hole. And the end of that is you have a hole because you want to hang a painting or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be really clear. I come out of the fitness business. I spent about a decade. I owned a chain of eight, seven-figure gyms. Fitness specifically, if you look at how it is positioned, is usually, let me tell you how many square feet we have. Let me tell you about the equipment. Let me tell you about all the amenities. Nobody cares.
Right.
What they want is to look better naked.
Yep.
So the example of that would be like, if you were owning a gym, like what equipment would you have? I would say it really doesn't matter. What I would talk about is how I'm going to make you look amazing. Your friends are going to be jealous about how great you look. Your spouse, who doesn't look at you the same way now than they did 10 years ago, are going to be drooling over you. That's the business I'm in. I think so often we fall prey to like the tangible when really people are more emotional. We call this selling the vacation, not the plane flight.
Mm-hmm.
So if I walked up to your door, instead of saying, hi, do you want your lawn mowed? Like, Wendy, I want to paint you a picture. It's like July, wind is blowing. It's a nice sunny day out. You want to be out by the pool drinking a fruity drink at the end of a long week. And when you drive past your house, you go, my house looks like $1 million. And you go past your neighbor's house and you go, it doesn't look like they care as much. But totally. More importantly, everyone else drives by and goes, that is the perfect house. That is the best house in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I want you to feel that pride of ownership. Mm-hmm. How do you think you would feel coming back to your house knowing that everything is taken care of and your home reflects just how great of a person you are? And you don't have to lift a finger.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
I'm curious too, because I can see how sometimes when we, like you were saying, if you get 50% no's, that's probably a good indicator that like maybe your pricing could be off. I could also see that that might be an indicator that maybe you're targeting the wrong area. Like if we're doing the lawn care business and we're doing, you know, lawn envy or curb appeal or whatever we're going to call it. Okay. So we have our business, but I could also see like if somebody came and knocked on my personal door and had that sales pitch, I'd be like, yeah, sounds nice, but I'll just mow my lawn. And that doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It means I'm the wrong customer. And so I'm kind of curious, like, how do you decipher between wrong market and right offer? Like, how do you start to even see if like, maybe that's why you're getting so many no's?
Yeah. So that's where kind of the pricing structure comes in. So if you haven't heard of an Ascension model, the idea is you get somebody on like the low end and then you sell them additional things or you move them up in your value chain. So long as you can do it profitably, then maybe there's an option for that, which is like, hey, I'm going to make your house look amazing. You're like, yeah, that's a little too much. I really just need the lawn mowed. Like, cool. Our crews are already in the neighborhood. So really it's what I'm hearing you say is your time isn't more valuable than the $50 or $30 it's going to cost to mow your lawn. Mm-hmm. This is me. If I was standing there, I'd be like, so I noticed there was a trampoline in the backyard. So how many kids do you have? And you go, I have 2 kids or whatever. You're like, okay. So just out of curiosity, do you prefer to be spending your weekends mowing or would you prefer to be spending quality time with them? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I'd rather, like, you strike me as the person who really wants to spend quality time, you know, with your family. Yes. Okay. I already have crews in the area. So like we can do it for $25 a mow. Like that, I'm not really worried about that. What I'm more worried about is buying your time back to make sure that you can spend it on the things that you really want. So can you do it? Yes. But we can do it faster and cheaper than probably otherwise. And I want to give you the opportunity to spend that time that you want with your family. How does that sound?
And
if there's anything else you ever need, then just give me a call and we can take care of anything else you need as it comes up.
That's cool. I think that's a good way to go. Would you ever, like, we're really picking on the lawn service business because that's our example here, but would you ever do, if you're sensing like a lot of hesitancy, but like, I just don't know if this is what I want. Would you ever like pair that with like, listen, if you hate it, we're going to give your money back. Or is that something where you're like, I don't usually recommend that.
Yeah. I mean, you can always do like it sounds like you're, you know, have you ever actually, my first question would be, have you actually ever had somebody else mow your lawn? Because there are those people that just take pride in like every week on Saturday, I'm out there. Like I, you know, that's a thing. And I'm like, that would be my first question. You're like, okay, is there a reason why you haven't done that in the past? And you're like, you know what? Honestly, I'm just really detailed. And anybody, like if somebody else does it and they don't cut it right or something, like I'm just going to look at it and it's going to stick out like a sore thumb. Totally. I'm like, you know what? I totally get that. Just keep me in mind if there's anything else like trees and shrub like that you might not want to deal with, like just give me a call. But otherwise, like give me a shout anytime. I totally appreciate it. Thanks so much. I probably wouldn't sell you on that.
Yeah.
But fair. If you're like, oh yeah, I had one, like, oh, so you had like, did you keep like going? Like, are you with them now? No, they raised their prices and it really didn't make sense. Or they, you know, I found somebody else or I decided to do it myself because I got laid off or whatever it is. Like, I just want to know why. I'm a big believer in asking lots of questions because you're not pitching. You need context.
Right.
And so to answer your question about market, if I just kept going to the same people and everyone mows their lawn and no one's ever hired somebody to do it for them, I'd probably think like, all right, I'm kind of probably barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, maybe you also a know. Tree.
Yeah. You also know kind of driving by, you know, using this example, like you'll know which houses are probably the ones that are, you know, that's where I get in with real estate agents, and you can look at home values and stuff like that. That's me being like, I care about my time. I'd right. find those pockets of kind of the middle tier, most likely.
Yeah.
The very ones that smart. Can afford it. But yeah.
It's very smart. And then when it comes to service businesses as well, what are some things that you think are just like low hanging fruit that a lot of service businesses just mess up?
Yeah. So when you're starting, you spend way too much time trying to create the perfect product and not enough time making offers. True. That's kind of the first. Once you've just started getting the business going, we don't spend enough time talking to our customers and getting feedback. We're too worried about shaking the tree and taking a negative. Like if I ask them what they would improve, it highlights all the things I don't do. That is a misconception. They're gonna realize you actually care. So surveying is something I don't think we do a good enough job of in general to understand what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And there's some structures that are in place on how to do that effectively. Pricing is where I specialize. So I think we, generally speaking, and I'm using broad brush, we don't price strategically. And that usually comes from a fear of pricing too high. So we usually use a three-tier pricing structure to make sure we can capture the different types of buyers. There's an idea that all buyers are the same. I'll give you an example of this. In our gyms, we started with a single price point. We were $69 a month. Doesn't matter. Everybody was the same price point. It was easy for us. But what reality was is there were people that thought that was expensive, and there were people that thought that was incredibly cheap. Right. Fast forward 3 years, we had three pricing tiers. It started at $20 a week, so about $80 a month. And our top tier was $250 a week. Mm-hmm. So excuse me, $400 a week. We ended up averaging about $260 Whoa. Blended by having space in between, because there are just those people that'll walk in and be like, nope, just give me the top tier. 5 to 10% of all buyers will take your VIP program. Huh. So if you do not have a top tier program specifically for those people, you are losing a ton of profit. It's all margin.
Yeah,
it should be the highest margin thing that you have in your business, and people will buy it. And at the very least, what it does is it price anchors high. You will actually sell more of your middle tier. There's a lot of strategy, psychology involved. I work with a non-medical home care business, one of the most competitive businesses out there, because there's Medicare involved and all this stuff. We have increased their average hourly rate by 25% in 60 days simply by having a high ticket offer. And in the first 60 days, and I knew this going in, and I told them this was going to be the case, until your salespeople get better or acquisition gets better, you will probably sell zero of them. And he's like, so why are we doing this? And I was like, do it and watch. Don't do anything different. Just put a high ticket, and it's like three times the price. They sold, their closing rate went from 25%, 27% to, he just closed 80% last week on a middle tier that is higher ticket than it was before. It's all perception.
It's true. And I mean, there's also like the perception for sure. And you will have some people, like you said, 5 to 10% that might take you up on that. So when they do take you up on that, what do you, like, I mean, obviously you got to deliver, but like what are some of the things that you think are good value adds that can warrant a higher price tag?
Yeah. So just think about the reasons why people pay more is to reduce risk or reduce investment. So if it's a shorter time period, if it's they have to do less of something, or you can deliver it faster. So what this very generally can look like is it's like a done for you program of some kind. So if you're in, lawn care is, we're at that example, you could just add more things to the program. I actually have a great framework for this. I call it the product expansion formula. And the idea is there's six ways that we actually create products, three digital and three physical. Some of them are higher margin, things like access. People do, home services businesses do this all the time. Pay me $50 a month and you'll get the 1 hour turnaround, when your water heater breaks, instead of the 48 hour turnaround.
Right.
Super, super simple. If you don't have something like that, a warranty program, high touch, fast turnaround type of program, just about every business can use it. In the fitness space, we use accountability as our high margin offer, because it helps with stickiness.
Yep.
So it can be a, if you're in home services, it can be, we'll come and clean your, you know, clean the vents every 6 months and you pay for that. Yep. I worked with a dentist and I said, outside of teeth cleaning and things like that, what else can we do? I was like, what's the next thing that people buy? And they said, and he said, toothpaste. I'm like, how much toothpaste do you sell right now? He goes, zero. I said, that's because we're all going to pick your spot, Amazon or something like that.
Yeah.
At the end of every cleaning, I just want you to offer that we will drop ship toothpaste to their door once a month on recurring and just see what happens. And he goes, okay. They turn that into a $25,000 a year profit center, drop shipping toothpaste.
That's wild. That seriously is wild. And I like too that it doesn't require, like when you were talking about this, my brain immediately went to like add-ons, like, oh, teeth whitening, yeah, which is like probably fine. But also that's like another, you still have to perform that service. Like it's more like trading your time more, where this is a little bit more hands-off.
Yeah. So like there's all sorts of ways to do it. But every business is a little bit different, but it has to do with who's the core audience, what problem are we solving, mm-hmm, and how many different ways can we support them in their journey to their, you know, kind of ideal future state.
I like it. I think this is so helpful for anybody who is picking up what we're putting down and they want to learn more about you and just like how they can even just like glean some of your knowledge. Like, where do you believe is the best place to start? Is it your podcast, Leveling the Field, or is there somewhere else they should go?
Yeah. So if you've been listening to this, just DM, go to Instagram. I'm tim.calise, tim.calise. And DM me MNP, meaning Money Nerds Podcast, on Instagram.
Awesome.
And I will give you that framework I just mentioned a minute ago, that product expansion formula. I will give that to you and then also make myself available for any questions and things like that as a supporter of the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing that, Tim. That's, I think the framework is definitely helpful. I could also see this, like we're talking about starting your own business, maybe doing a service business, being self-employed. But shoot, this like goes directly to, even if you're in a normal 9-to-5 and you're looking to provide more value for your employer, like all of this stuff kind of matters too. That's how you move up the chain faster, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the more value we can deliver, the more we can command. And whether you do that inside of as a, you know, we call them intrapreneurs, like if you're part of an organization, right? It's being an entrepreneur is a tough road
for those so hard. That
kind of are thinking about it, right? Like it's not as glamorous all the time as it might be made out to be. So I'm a big believer in helping folks maximize their earning potential, regardless of kind of what framework that might sit in.
That's cool. I appreciate that too. Yeah. All right, Tim, before we officially part ways, are you down for some rapid fires?
Yes, of course. Let's do it.
All right. My first question for you, where's one location you're dying to travel to?
I want to get back to, I've been there before. I want to go back to Florence, Italy is one of my favorite places. I want to get back there with my wife.
That would be amazing. Yes, I agree. Yeah. Florence is great. They have a really good sandwich shop there. If you ever go back, send me a message. I'll say it is the bomb. I don't know what it is.
Really?
Like, legit, the best sandwich I've ever had.
Okay. I will take you up on that.
Definitely do. Okay. My next question for you, what is one book you find yourself gifting to others most often?
The one I am on right now, which I highly recommend to anyone, is Dan Martell's Buy Back Your Time.
Mm, I've read that one.
Dan Martell, for those that don't know him, he runs a company called SaaS Academy. He is the number one coach to software founders and business owners, thousands of them. He has an amazing team. But he wrote a book called Buy Back Your Time, and it has fundamentally changed the way I look at structuring my schedule, personal life, professional life, managing time, delegation, all of those types of things. So if you are like, how do I get more out of my day? How do I structure my day so I am excited to wake up in the morning? And I don't have a ton of money, but I need to hire other people to help support me outside of my kind of the things I'm really good at. Dan will give you the theory as well as the exact tactics behind the book Buy Back Your Time, Dan Martell.
Awesome. I'm going to add that to my reading list too. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. What's one purchase you recently made that has made your life better?
Oh, that has made my life better. I'm kind of looking around because I have most of my stuff around here now. So we were talking off, so we just moved. I'm a doodler. So I got an iPad Pro.
Sweet.
With the Apple Pencil, I think, like, of like the major things that I've bought recently, because my brain works faster than I can type. And so I think for me, that has been a really positive, that with Notability has kind of fundamentally changed my, how I manage myself on a day-to-day basis.
That's so cool. That's very fun. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I've got one last question for you. And of course, you know, this is a financial podcast. So I'm curious, in your opinion, what is the secret to financial success?
Here is that wealth is a ratio, not a number. So what you should be looking for is to get your passive income greater than your monthly expenses. And I will say, just for context, when I was growing up, I thought I would be, you know, I would be wealthy with X dollars in the bank. And now I think about it is I will be financially free when I have cash flow of X, because it means I have complete financial freedom to do what I want when I want. And so it's acquiring assets that then can create cash flow to cover up my living expenses.
I love that. It's such a great answer. Very financial independence. I appreciate that take too. I think it's awesome. All right, Tim, it has been so much fun learning from you. Thank you again for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
Okay, what'd you think? I love this episode. I thought it was so interesting and so informative. One of the things that really stood out to me was just how practical he made starting this lawn care business. And it went from just mowing lawns to all of a sudden now you are going to be the curb appeal that everyone's talking about. I thought that was so interesting and it just a really good insight into how Tim thinks and how his brain works. But I'd love to hear from you. What were your takeaways from this episode? Do me the biggest favor and tag me on Instagram. Take a screenshot of this and let me know you're listening in. It is so helpful and I love connecting with fellow money nerds. It just like completely makes my whole day. All right. I will see you guys on Friday for 5 Tip Friday or next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.